You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Well, here's some good news. After today, you won't have to hear about another political rally in Ohio for a while or another poll result showing the two candidates running neck and neck. Todd Purdom, Vanity Fair's national editor, joins us now to commiserate on this final day of a long, long campaign. Hello, welcome back to our show.
Glad to be with you, Leonard.
You're in Washington, D.C. Does the election look different within the Beltway than it does in the rest of the country?
I think it looks about the same. One of the things that's a reality here because of our proximity to Virginia, which is a swing state, is we are inundated with ads. They just cannot escape them on television all year long, and it will be a relief not to have that clutter in your face all the time.
In the end, was the economy the most important issue for voters this year?
You know, it's a very interesting question because, of course, in the sort of final stage of the campaign, some of these hot-button issues took precedence, social issues, abortion, contraception, questions like that that Obama used to appeal to women voters. So I think the economy may turn out to be the issue in the sense that it is actually getting a little bit better, not very quickly and not dramatically, but people do seem to feel that the economy has turned a corner. And the latest jobs numbers last week would seem to, you know, be another continuing good sign. So if the president should be reelected, I think it will be, at least in part, because people feel the economy has begun to turn around and they should stick with it and see what happens.
Well, since Ohio has been described as the key state in all of this, whether it is or not, there's been much made about all of the jobs in the auto industry. So at least in Ohio, it will be a serious issue. In other cases, we have heard people complain that they've been out of work for a long time or they're about to graduate from college and they don't see much in the future for them.
No, it's certainly a difficult time. I mean, I remember I graduated from college 30 years ago in the middle of what came to be known as the Reagan recession, and it was hard to find a job in 1982, but I've actually been talking with some young people who are looking for jobs right now, and it's a very tight market.
Mitt Romney is hoping to persuade voters that his economic plan will lower the unemployment rate and improve the economy. Do you think he's been able to make a convincing case?
I think he has not been able to make a convincing case, or the election, the polls wouldn't be so close. This year began with most people thinking the Republicans had a wonderful tee shot at the presidency, that the economic indicators and the right track, wrong track numbers and all these kind of historical data points were pointing to a very tough re-election battle for the president. And of course, even if he wins, it will have been a very tough battle. But I think if Governor Romney had really managed to close the deal, he would be, you know, far ahead in the polls. And I think the fact that he hasn't is probably a testament to the fact that he hasn't persuaded people on the economy, and also somehow that he hasn't persuaded people about his personality, about who he is, about his sort of essential nature. People seem to have been reluctant to embrace him.
Well, the Obama campaign has argued that Romney's math doesn't add up. But do you think that voters look closely at either party's math?
I think voters often don't look at the math very closely. But the one thing the Obama campaign has done is all year long, in places like Ohio especially, they have hammered and hammered and hammered at Mitt Romney over things like the auto bailout, over things like Bain Capital's restructuring and closing of businesses and so forth. And that impression did stick, and that is what has, if President Obama wins Ohio, that will have been the reason, because he defined Mitt Romney early and often, and his definition stuck.
Well, Mitt Romney has been making the case that his business experience makes him better qualified for the job of president. We've had a number of businessmen as presidents. What kind of track record have they had?
Well, I actually wrote a piece about that for the magazine this fall. The truth is, the most successful business people who've become president were arguably Herbert Hoover, Warren Harding, and Jimmy Carter, and none of them would be considered to be a successful president. Some of the most successful presidents either had no business experience or failed in business, as Abraham Lincoln and Harry Truman did. So I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the skills that make a good business person are not necessarily the ones that translate easily into political success. And being a CEO is really not at all like being a president, because when you're a CEO, you have a whole bunch of people who work for you and who hop when you say hop. when you're the president, you have to persuade a bunch of potentially very reluctant allies with their own agendas in a place called Congress. And it may be fair enough to say that, you know, President Obama has, quote, never met a payroll. But Mitt Romney's own experience in Massachusetts showed the limits of his ability to deal with the legislature. He didn't much like it. He didn't much get involved in the nitty-gritty of politics. And he likes to brag that he didn't inhale, quote-unquote, and you know, left the governorship after one term.
Well, on a local level, business people often do make the case. That's why we have Mayor Bloomberg in New York. Do you think that people think a business background may be good preparation for government because they're so suspicious of career politicians?
I certainly think there's often what pollsters like to call a halo effect about a business executive, and certainly Mayor Bloomberg is exhibit A of the successful business person as politician, although we've seen just last week in his handling of whether to cancel the marathon, perhaps some of the limits of his political acumen, and a person more finely attuned to the politics of the question might have made a different decision sooner. But I think people do look. Ross Perot 20 years ago, even the flirtation with someone like Donald Trump, who's been a notably mixed success as a businessman, does bespeak a certain kind of hunger for someone who's not a politician, who's not steeped in the kind of log rolling ways of the world, but who has a different outlook. And certainly, you know, in the periodic boomlets for the idea of a Bloomberg candidacy, that certainly is what motivates it. And I certainly think Mayor Bloomberg thinks he'd make a good president.
Well, and he may very well be running somewhere down the line. But Rudy Giuliani could not translate being mayor of New York into being a successful candidate for president. When John Kerry was running for president, the fact that he was wealthy was seen as a liability, got a lot of criticism for it. Has Romney's wealth been much of a liability for him during this campaign? I mean, he's worth about $250 million.
Yeah, I think it has been somewhat of a liability, particularly because of the way he acquired his wealth and the way he's invested it. And, you know, his unwillingness to release more of his tax returns, really, which caused a pretty big controversy for him, really suggests that he believes that if he released them, there would be even more controversy, not because he's done anything illegal or improper, but simply because he's made the kind of investments in offshore accounts and very sophisticated investment vehicles and those kinds of things that would be, to say the least, very unusual for a president to have done. And I think on balance, his wealth has probably hurt him more than it's helped him.
Well, do you think that the growing divide between the wealthiest Americans and the rest of us has gained traction as something voters feel needs to be fixed?
Well, I certainly think that the lack of, you know, increase in real incomes of middle-class Americans over the past decades is something that is really a problem. And I think people do sense that we live in a country where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And I think and the middle class is getting squeezed between. I think people do sense that. On the other hand, the American life has always been marked by these two strains. One, the sort of communitarian strain, let's get together to raise a barn or have a quilting bee. And the other, the flinty independence, like I did it myself, or as the Republicans will say this year, you know, we built that. So I think there's also a streak in the American character that very much prizes self-sufficiency and upward mobility. And I think for the Republicans, they often try to say that the president and the Democrats want to redistribute wealth, and they see that as a bad thing. So it's no accident that over some of the most economically challenged times in our history, we have not embraced socialism or other forms of arrangements of capital and labor. We've persisted with capitalism, and I expect we always will.
Although the president is often accused by people on the right of being a socialist, I haven't seen much socialism coming from him or from the Democratic Party. Todd Purdom writes on politics regularly in Vanity Fair as its national editor. And we're talking about, well, what else? Politics on Election Day. You brought to mind in this conversation two movements, the Occupy movement and the Tea Party movement. The Occupy movement was largely absent during the campaign. It didn't turn into a political wing as the Tea Party has for the Republican Party. Did it have much influence on the campaign for the presidency or for any of the House or Senate races or any of the local races?
I don't think you could say that it did in the way that the Tea Party had an influence in the 2010 midterms, for example. the Tea Party caucus in Congress seems here to stay for a while at least, and the Occupy movement never managed to get the same traction on the left that the Tea Party has on the right, and I'm not quite sure why that is, except that, you know, we really are kind of a centrist country, perhaps center-right, perhaps center-left, depending on the hour or the week or the day. But I think somehow Occupy came to seem outside the mainstream. The Tea Party, of course, is also outside the mainstream. But the Republican, the nature of the Republican Party is such that there is a bigger potential audience, I think, on the far right than there is for the Democrats on the far left.
Well, the Tea Party had a very powerful influence during the Republican primaries, but it looks like a number of their candidates are now in trouble in the general election.
Yes, that's part of the problem they face, and they even faced that in 2010, of course, with, for example, the Delaware Senate race. The Steve Schmidt, the veteran of the McCain and other campaigns, said the other day, I heard him, that, you know, the Republicans will have trouble in these races when they let the Wackadoodle caucus, and he was referring to the Tea Party, make their choices. Voters, especially swing voters in, you know, statewide elections, do not seem to want to embrace extremists of either stripe, but some of the Tea Party candidates, to put it mildly, are not in the mainstream.
Well, the Tea Party seems to be reluctant to embrace Mitt Romney, but I suspect most of the people who identify as such will be voting for him. Do you think that was helped by his choice of Paul Ryan as his running mate?
He certainly hoped it would help, and it certainly seemed in the beginning to kind of energize part of the Republican base. It's interesting, though, because I think in the recent weeks, Congressman Ryan's profile has not been as high as I might have expected it to be, and I think that's because the Romney campaign also does realize that for every Republican voter he energizes, he may well turn off a swing voter who's worried about his budget plan and the changes in Medicare and so forth that it would imply. So I think you have to say that he's been a kind of a mixed bag. And I think also, as people thought about it, I haven't seen the polling on this, so I should be careful, but I do think there was a feeling that Congressman Ryan had not passed the commander-in-chief test at a very difficult time. And certainly in his debate with Vice President Biden, everyone made a great deal about Vice President Biden's, you know, guffawing and sighing and so forth. But he did know his stuff. And by the end of that debate, Paul Ryan looked as if he'd memorized a lot of names and places in foreign countries, but was kind of struggling to keep up with the professor.
Well, so even if the ticket loses, what do you think of his future political career? He's also running for his congressional seat again, and he's likely to win that.
Yes, I'm one of the people who does think he probably has a bright future, in the sense that he's now been around the track. He's beloved by the part of the, he's the sort of thing you like if you like that sort of thing. The part of the Republican Party that likes him sees him as the kind of intellectual heart and soul of the party and of the conservative movement. So I suspect he would be a very strong contender 4 years from now if he and Governor Romney should lose. And he will have had the experience, which is really something you cannot overestimate the importance of. He will have had the experience of running not only a nationwide race, but a very hotly contested nationwide race all over the country. And that that really changes a person, I think, and he will be much better educated. Look at how much more effective a candidate Governor Romney was this time in his second outing than he was 4 or 5 years ago. It really helps to have had a practice run.
It's been suggested that Governor Christie of New Jersey has boosted his chances if Romney doesn't win because of the way he dealt with Hurricane Sandy. And the this week FEMA has been in the news. Has this highlighted the issue of what kind of role the government should play in reacting to crises and disasters like Sandy?
I think it has highlighted the role, and certainly Governor Christie has helped his own chances for re-election in New Jersey, if nothing else. I think Governor Christie may be all too aware of how some of the more moderate aspects of his approach would have trouble going over in the Republican Party. And, of course, win or lose, the Republican Party is poised to have some kind of a civil war, because If Governor Romney loses, there'll be a big argument about why, and plenty of people will say it's because the party, again, nominated a moderate. Other people will say, no, it's because the party twisted this decent, moderate man into a caricature of himself to satisfy the conservative base in the primaries, and that made the general election unwinnable for him. So I think they're on the verge of a kind of a really important generational fight, and we don't know how that will come out.
Well, it's been suggested that he had to take some pretty hard stances to get the nomination. He said early in the campaign that he wanted to do away with FEMA, and now he has softened that. He had to do those things to win in the primaries. And this is something that people have argued is a problem in America in general. The primaries tend to bring out the more ideological base in both parties.
Yes, that's true. Just as congressional districts tend to favor the extremists of both parties because of the way they're drawn. And I think, you know, it's an interesting, and for Governor Romney, perhaps a very poignant question, what would have happened to him if he had been able to run the entire year the way he portrayed himself and the way he governed in Massachusetts as a fundamentally kind of a moderate centrist person who, you know, imposed universal health care and an employer mandate and so forth and so on. If he'd been able to do that, I think he could have made a very formidable opponent for President Obama, and it was the torture that he had to put himself through in the primaries that in some ways left him, you know, very badly positioned. It wasn't really until he didn't even really try to present himself that way at his convention. It was not really until the first debate that, as Bill Clinton says, old moderate Mitt came back, and as of course we know, he came roaring back in that first debate.
Hurricane Sandy and all the immense wreckage it left behind took some of the spotlight off the election, at least in this area. Did it take the wind out of the sails of either campaign, or is that something that we in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut are more aware of than we would be if we lived in other parts of the country?
No, I think it did take a little bit of the wind out of Governor Romney's sails, and certainly there will be Republicans who argue if he loses that that's the case. Governor Haley Barbour of Mississippi has already been notably out there saying that. The problem for Governor Romney was that as a challenger and a non-incumbent office holder, he had nothing to do. He had no official role, and he risked looking, you know, craven or silly if he tried to insert himself into the situation somehow. So even that event he had to lay on at the last minute in Ohio where they were stocking food for, Sandy's victims, had the air of kind of desperation as if he had to do something, whereas President Obama was, you know, it's totally natural and unforced for the President of the United States to visit the area of devastation. And that's what was so remarkable about his tour with Governor Christie is that it was great politics for both men, and it was also great on the merits, and it's what the public would expect. So when those two considerations align, as we say in Brooklyn, that's the beauty part.
Well, Governor Christie says he's still voting for Romney. It's my sense that most Americans had their minds made up about the election months ago. Do you think there are still voters who will only decide who they're going to vote for when they're in the voting booth?
Well, there are, you know, all the polls show a relatively tiny sliver of undecided voters. In elections like this, those voters sometimes simply stay home. And I think, you know, you'd have to be almost, you know, insensate not to have had some opinion by now, because you've been bombarded by both campaigns with ads, with dueling debates, and so forth. So you really do wonder who would still be undecided. I think part of the reason that has happened this year, maybe more than most, is that both candidates have their flaws. Both candidates have their limitations. And President Obama obviously has left many former supporters disappointed. Many people who voted for him 4 years ago have simply not seemed to be able to bring themselves to wholeheartedly embrace him this time. And Governor Romney has just had a very hard time closing the sale. He's just had a hard time closing the sale. And I think that is a testament to the flaws of each person as a candidate and perhaps, you know, as a man.
Now, one thing Sandy did was to get people talking about climate change, a topic that's been completely absent in the political conversation. And both Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Cuomo alluded to climate change when storms like this are becoming more frequent and the state and city need to take that seriously. Why do you think climate change was largely ignored until now, just barely got mentioned by either candidate?
Well, because for the Republicans nationally, it's a very divisive issue. There are plenty of people in the party who don't believe it as a phenomenon or don't believe it's man-caused. For the president, it's something he wanted to avoid because it's controversial, it's expensive, it's one of those issues that divides people. But certainly many in the Democratic base are disappointed in his environmental record and disappointed that he has not done more on that issue. And it's like all other political issues. When they come to your own front door, you feel differently about them than you do in the abstract. And I would be surprised if people all over the Northeast Corridor are not now thinking about climate change a little bit differently than they did 2 weeks ago. And I think it's a remarkable moment that Governor Cuomo and Mayor Bloomberg, you know, seem determined in some ways to seize upon, to fix, you know, focus public attention on. And it'll be interesting to see how short or long people's memories are as the waters recede and the power comes back on. And it'll be especially interesting to see what the president, if he's reelected, might do about it in any second term.
Well, when he was governor of Massachusetts, Romney was a supporter of cap and trade and promoted clean, renewable energy. That can be seen as another liability with the Republican base.
Yes, and that's part, again, of the tortured existence he's had all year. I sometimes wonder how much he must wish he could have simply, you know, waved a wand and become the Republican nominee and then run a very different kind of campaign. It'll be one of the questions that historians ponder for years if he loses, and it'll be a challenge for the party going forward. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt about that at all.
In September, you wrote a column about America's lofty self-regard. Do you see that as a problem? And do you see evidence of it in every election or just this one in particular?
I think we do. We have a habit of wishful thinking. We assume, partly because we're optimistic and it's part of our character, that everything will turn out all right. But we do have an amazing ability to ignore the real problems staring us in the face. And our politics at this moment seem particularly sort of dysfunctional and fractured, so that, you know, the in Congress cannot even agree on something as simple and routine, or what was used to be simple and routine, as raising the debt ceiling, much less resolve all these issues of the so-called fiscal cliff and tax policy. And nothing gets done until there's a catastrophe looming. And I'm actually at work on a book about the 1964 Civil Rights Act, you know, which was arguably the most important law of the 20th century, and it got passed in the 7 months after President Kennedy's assassination by overwhelming bipartisan margin and bipartisan cooperation. And it was a very, very controversial issue. And I just don't see any sign that we're in a state now where the two parties could cooperate on something so important.
If you read Robert Caro's book, you also realize that Lyndon Johnson was a very persuasive president and could get people who would have voted against that bill to vote for it. We're not seeing that kind of leadership in Washington. Haven't seen it for a very long time.
No, it's true. And Rahm Emanuel, when he was chief of staff for President Obama, once told me that if modern White Houses did the kind of things LBJ had done, there'd probably be a special prosecutor called up to investigate what blandishments and promises had been made to get votes. But I think the bigger problem is that the way the parties themselves are structured, it used to be that the Republicans were internally divided between the conservatives in the Midwest and the moderate liberals in big states like New York, like Jacob Javits and people like that, while the Democrats were divided between the Southerners and the big urban labor parties like, you know, the industrial states. And so to get anything done, the parties had to cooperate with each other because neither one alone had the ability to, you know, get anything done. And that's totally changed now.
Just one more thing. This has been a year of vicious political attack ads, especially in the swing states where TV ads a negative anyway, but they've been even worse this year. Is this what the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling brought us, or do you think it's just because the country is so polarized?
Well, I think the nature of the ads is because the country is so polarized. I think it's also possible that these outside groups are willing to say things and say them in nastier ways than you'll notice that some of the very nastiest messages do not end. You know, I'm Mitt Romney and I approve this message. It's a message delivered by someone else. And I certainly think the volume, the sheer volume of advertisements is you know, unimaginable without Citizens United. And I'm very pessimistic about whether anything can be done about that problem, but it's certainly been a problem.
Thank you so much, Todd. Todd Purdom is Vanity Fair's national editor. We've been talking about what else? Politics on Election Day.